This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Let's jump in right away. We're pleased to be joined by the governor of the state, Tim Walz. Governor Walz is with us on the CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus hotline. Tim, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming back on the show. When I mentioned through a couple of platforms I was going to have you on and encourage individuals to reach out on topics that I should ask you about, overwhelming was emergency powers. You made that decision right as the pandemic was enveloping our country on March 13th. You've made the decision to extend it, as you know, much to the consternation of Republicans. Can you tell the voters some of the metrics that you would need to see to say we're now going to adjust or we're now going to end the emergency powers?
Well, good afternoon, Chad. Yeah, thank you for having me on. And I will, you know, let your listeners know all other 50 governors are in the same situation with emergency powers, as is the president. In fact, the president and I have had on the emergency powers for the exact same amount of time. And I think explaining to people what emergency powers are, they're in law, they're given by the legislature and the Constitution. And so, for example, we have a tornado. I'm able to call out the National Guard or whatever it may be. And so you can think of it as a toolbox, and you take tools out by those emergency powers. You can either extend them to things like where we did the stay-at-home order, or you can do things to waive some of the licensing rules so that we could move hogs when we needed to dispose of them. And so what I've asked is, many of these things can be codified by the legislature, is to put them in place until we start to see that this virus is long-term under control. And I will want to thank Minnesotans. Compared to many other states, we're in a pretty good spot. Over the last 7 days, we've tested over 100,000 people. Our positivity rate is about 4.7%. That compares to South Dakota at 17.8 or North Dakota at 22.8, or when you saw things blow up in Arizona, 30%. And so we've set some of these metrics that we've set all along that we're tracking, things like positivity rate. If it gets under 5%, that's considered good. We're there. New cases per 100,000. We're at 11.4. We should really be under 10, ideally under 5, and then community spread, where this is coming from. That's the biggest problem. And so once you get to a point, and we've set up our system to be in it for the long haul, so that our businesses can stay open. In fact, in Florida, it's just this week, their bars are going to open again because they've been closed. So dialing these things back is always been there. We've always put that out. The emergency powers, many of those emergency orders have expired or been rescinded. So there's also a nuance of saying the governor's overreaching, taking these powers. I'm doing the same thing that all other governors are doing. And most of these things, there's pretty strong agreement around. And I'll acknowledge that there's some folks don't want to wear a mask. Fair enough. But the metrics are there. The controls of COVID, once we are in a place where we can assure that we're protecting as many citizens as possible, it does make sense, as we've done.
Just let me jump in because we're a little short on time here. But what would those numbers need to be, sir? You know, I think people understand. I think there was great uniformity early. I think there's frustration. I think people are very curious to hear those numbers. But how would those numbers need to change to pull some of these layers back? What would they have to be?
Well, for example, Chad, I don't foresee pulling back on masks because it's free and it makes a difference. But to pull back, say, for example, on 50% indoor capacity on dining, you start to see, you probably need to have those numbers down around 2% on positivity rates, which we're moving in the right direction, and then being able to contract trace them. The thing is, nobody's going to go back to these places anyway. And restaurants know this if they're not safe. If you have a reputation for giving people salmonella, people don't eat there. If you have a reputation for spreading COVID, it doesn't work either. So those numbers are pretty consistent. And I think one of the measures is if you take all the 50 states, we're in about the top 15 of businesses that are open and restrictions that aren't there. So there's narrative that we're an island. And granted, you see things being done a little bit different in South Dakota and North Dakota, but you're talking populations of around 600,000 instead of 6 million and population densities of less than 10 people per square mile. So I think we're there. I mean, we've been turning that dial. We've gone from and continued to open and move some of those things. I think the thing I ask a lot of people is, what specifically do you want changed? You want no masks and no restrictions in any businesses? Because what will happen then is you'll end up like Florida, and you'll end up having even tighter restrictions to get a handle on this. So I do think we're there. I think those emergency powers were granted. As I said, I think this is the one that needs to be there. Every single governor is using this. And in fact, Minnesota is using them probably more sparingly than certainly over half the states.
So let me talk about comments that Paul Gazelka and other Republicans have made, including Paul Gazelka with me, just after the two of you met a couple weeks ago. And he said his frustration with you was on the tone, that he didn't feel like you were inclusive enough. I remember, and I pointed this out to Paul Gazelka, you're on my show at the fair just as you're coming to, you know, obviously late summer, your first year, and you shouted out. Paul Gazelka was in the audience listening to you on our show here, and you talked about that positive relationship. Is there any part of these difficult decisions where, when you look back now 6 months later, that you feel like you should have been more inclusive towards the other side, and there might be more uniformity within the state as opposed to some of the division, which is out there, not all, but some of the division towards some of the decisions you've made?
Yeah, and we've started out together on this. Just to be clear, I think the frustration comes is if there's not an agreement. And just so your listeners know, is I said that, you know what, we could pull off almost all of the things we have in there and we could agree on if you guys would just make sure you fund the testing program. And then I asked them in the legislature, why don't you guys carry the mask mandate? It'll send a signal to your constituents and the folks out that this is a smart thing to do. It's easy. The data is there to support this, and they're not going to do this. I'm more than willing to do this, but I have to tell you right now, Chad, it's a pretty good position for them to be in, to accept none of the responsibility for having to keep Minnesotans safe and put all of the blame upon me. I'm more than willing to share those, but we have to move quickly. This is a legislature that took 9 months and could not pass a bonding bill that they all say they agree with. So if it comes time and I've got an opportunity to buy N95 masks for the hospitals, we have to move very quickly. I can't spend any money now without them approving it after the fact, but I can make those purchases or at least put myself in order to get those. And that's what every other state's doing. So what I think of it is, I get it on this. They don't believe COVID is that serious of a problem, and they disagree with some of those moves. We are going to disagree with that. And because of public health, those powers, the constitutional and legal powers, are granted to me. But I'm more than willing to help them. I'm more than willing to work together. But just to be clear, if I ask them to join in on this, and I've asked many times, what is your suggestion? Take off all restrictions, put every kid back in school. And just to be clear, well over half of our kids are already back in school, but done safely, and they're going to stay there. So it needs to be a two-way street. You can't just say, well, the governor can't be doing this. And again, every Republican governor in the United States is using these powers, most of them more extensively than I am.
Let's talk about restaurants, sir, because you alluded to it. You know, here we have a day where we may approach 80 degrees. Those days are going to come to conclusion fairly soon. By the time you get to early October, a lot of us throughout the state start saying we're not going to go to the outdoor patio situation. And there are so many people in the restaurant industry who are respectful of COVID, but say, I don't think I can last for another 6 months where it's just takeout, and are very fearful of what their business might look like, or flat out, can they survive? Yeah. What do you say to those folks? Because you know, whether it's owners, people work there,
yes,
that's tens of thousands of people who live in the state and are very curious about what's going to happen to their livelihood.
Yeah. Well, first of all, to be very clear, there has not been an industry outside of the direct healthcare workers that have been hit harder. And those who know this business, it's a small margin anyway. They have been hit disproportionately. It's because of the nature of it. It's confined space with large numbers of people of what it takes to make those bottom line work, that economy of scale. Those are the very situations that do not work. And it does not matter how badly you want them open, a state like Florida or Arizona, it will not work unless you do it in a manner that allows us to stay open. And what I'm most proud of is our restaurants have been open for indoor dining as early as almost any state, and they've stayed open. Now, the question is, can they make it on 50%? Most of them would say, no, the margin's so narrow, we've got to have 90%. Here's the thing that I can tell you with the data, Chad. States that don't have a capacity restriction, their reservations and their dining out is not that much larger than Minnesota's as it stands right now. People are just not going and packing back in. And then there is the cost of, just to be clear, if there were no restrictions and no masks and bars and restaurants were allowed to have as many people in as possible, we would have COVID to the point where it would be uncontrollable spread. So it's trying to strike that proper balance. I just want to say I am totally empathetic to where they're at. They are totally telling you the truth that they are on the edge. Many will have a difficult time to survive. But the idea of making this, that this is because of restrictions that were put in rather than the virus, is simply not held up by data. It's not true. And most restaurants, the vast majority, are doing everything that's asked of them and want to make sure that we're sending that message that it's safe to go eat. It is safe to go eat in businesses in Minnesota because of the measures that have been put in place. And so I think our goal is, and then we keep pushing those numbers down, we keep turning up the dial and get more people back in those businesses.
Let's talk about a couple other topics before we have to go. Police Chief Madary Arredondo was speaking to the city council about the number of officers available today, and it's a lower number. We obviously know what happened with the killing of George Floyd, but violent crime in Minneapolis has stood out for months. And there have been concerns about the biggest city in the state and the safety of it. Do you believe right now the city of Minneapolis is as safe as it should be? And what role can you play to ensure the residents or other people that want to still come down to many parts of Minneapolis, not just downtown, that it is safe enough?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think this is a zero-sum proposition. We always need to work to be safer. I just want to be clear, of the 10 states in the upper Midwest, Minnesota does still rank the lowest in crime. Is it as safe as it should be? Absolutely not at this point. I think you would hear that from Chief Arredondo. You'd hear it from Mayor Fry. You'd hear it from us. But the one thing is that the safety and the things that we're putting in place, what we don't need is people scaring everyone else in the rest of Minnesota to say, well, it's unsafe, it's out of control. We are trying to figure out, how do you strike the balance between those who are served by the police and those and the police doing their job? And I was down yesterday with the Lux Corporation as they announced they are moving into downtown Minneapolis. They believe that the innovation, that the workforce and the dynamic nature of it is a place where they want to be going in the future, a 100-year-old Minnesota company. So can we do more? Absolutely. Are we going to get it with just slogans and ideology alone? No. So we need to work hand in hand. We need to ensure that both folks visiting, folks working downtown feel safe, but we also need to feel that the communities that have felt disrespected and not served by the police have a say in how we get that. This is not an impossible task. We have done it before, as I said. We consistently rank in the lowest of states in terms of crime. And when we start to see an uptick in this, we have to look across the spectrum of things that's causing it. So, no, we need to do more. The state's role, we are not police. State Patrol patrols the highways, obviously. It is set up with local control. Our job is there to help make sure we're able to, and the legislature is able to help provide aid in terms of local government aid to communities so that they can make the decisions that's best for their community.
Last thing, and I'll let you go. COVID has crashed our economy. GDP contracted last quarter 33%. There are some areas where it's improved, but the idea of surplus money and the position the state was in has changed dramatically, just like it has with the 49 other states. How are you going to come up with more money to put the state back in balance, to balance a budget, and to keep the state where it has been the last few years? Will taxes have to be a part of it?
Well, as I've always said, we need to talk about everything, but I think how we got here, we created an innovative, diverse economy across this state. We came into COVID one of the top five states in terms of our fiscal ability in a rainy day fund as a percentage of our budget. We came in with AAA bond ratings. We had the lowest in the nation's unemployment rates. The fundamentals were certainly there. And when you end up in a downturn, states, unlike the federal government, we need to balance our budgets. I testified in front of Congress the other day, asked them to provide a little more help. This is where we are going to
Is that going to happen, sir? Do you think you're going to get congressional money?
No, not until after the election. It is not. And I don't think states should plan accordingly to that. And as just as a side note, state of Minnesota is 43rd in terms of least dependent on the federal government for aid. So I hear a lot of things from states saying, you know, we're doing it on our own. South Dakota is 22nd most dependent, a lot of federal dollars. So for us to get this right, we're going to have to come together, strategically plan on what grows the economy, not cut those things that make a difference and grow it, but figure out are there innovative ways that we can make a difference. And I don't think you approach this. I want to be clear. I think your listeners, they craft an image of things. I'm the first governor in a long time. We raised no taxes in my first 2 years in office. I have not raised a single tax since I've been governor.
Can you do it now, though?
I think it's just, a conversation.
Just bluntly, I mean, aren't you in a position where you're going to need significantly more revenue? And if it's not
potential.
Coming with federal government,
it's
isn't taxes one logical conclusion?
It is a place. And I just want to be clear. You know, my pro tip of the day to tell people is if you're running for governor, don't run on a gas tax. It's super unpopular with people. But the fact of the matter is you got to pay for the roads. And I can't promise you new roads without figuring out where they're going to come from. And that is a very specific, you know, tax that goes directly to the roads. So, you know, my political consultants would tell me, oh, for God's sakes, governor, don't ever talk about the gas tax again. Well, I'm the governor of Minnesota and have a responsibility, as do legislators. How are you going to fix those roads? How are you going to fix those bridges? How are you going to make sure that we, you know, we don't leave debt to our children to get there? So what I've said is, and just very honestly, Chad, I'll put everything on the table, and I'll tell you what that does. That angers everybody. The folks who say, don't you dare think about cutting anything in state government, and those who say, don't you dare think about revenues in this time. Somewhere in there, we're going to have to decide, what's the state look like that we want to live in? We are going to have to be thoughtful, just as families are, about budgeting, but I am not going to let the roof fall in on the state like you wouldn't on your house. If we have to replace the roof, we replace the roof, and that costs a little money. But in the long run, it adds value. And I think that's how we need to approach the budget.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time. Let's do it again soon, and we'll pay attention to what's going on.
Bring me back. Thanks, Chad.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.